Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay, I'm going to pick off where we were last time. We had this cubic function of two variables, and I wanted to understand its critical points. Critical points are where you will find local minima and local maxima, if such things exist for your function. And what we did last time was we actually found them. We didn't get to classifying yet. So let me remind you how we found them. Right. We computed the x partial derivative. Right. And it was 3x squared minus 5y. We computed the y partial derivative. It was 3y squared minus 5x. And then we solved a system of equations. What you need here, geometrically, if you're at a local min, a local max, or a saddle point, you're at a horizontal tangent plane. So you should think of it as your x slope is 0 and your y slope is 0. You can imagine this bowl resting on a flat table, or a flat table put on top of that hill. And you could imagine a kind of a flat table making a nice horizontal slice right through the middle of the saddle. And so we solved a system of two equations here. The first equation represents an upward opening parabola, and the second equation represents a rightward opening parabola. And we found that there were two solutions. One solution is just the origin, 0, 0. The other solution is where x and y are both 5/3. And so those are the two critical points. We had to do a little bit of algebra to do this, but we did the algebra, and we looked at a contour plot on the computer, and it looked like this one was a saddle point, and this one was a local minimum. I can't remember. Contours like this around 0, 0. So this is definitely a saddle point. And, you know, I'm not. That was a settle point, and I think the other one was a local minimum. I'll do the contour plot again to make sure. I just used Wolfram Alpha for it. And I think I just wrote something like Z equals X cubed. X cubed plus Y cubed minus 5XY. This screen goes lower than it needs to, so we'll unload. Anyways. Okay. And yes, I remember correctly. It's a local minimum. So here, it looks that's the origin. It's got the saddle point kind of contour plot. You had a horizontal slice through a saddle point. It makes an X. And then here, the darker colors represent lower Z values. Right, so what we have is a local minimum. This kind of scheme. And okay. So if you can get a good plot of it, you can see. Actually at the bottom of a little bowl. So this is an actual local minimum. So if you're at this point and you go in any direction, the Z values get higher because you're climbing out of the bottom of the bowl. Whereas the saddle point is not a local min or local max, because if you're here, you can go this way to increase the function. If you're here, you can go this way to decrease the function. So when you're right here, you can easily make the function go lower or higher, whichever way you want, with only a tiny motion. Whereas here, any small motions will only make the function higher. You'd have to climb all the way out of this bowl. You'd have to go a ways before you could actually get lower than this. So this is a local minimum. And what is the local minimum? Well, that's what you get when you plug in the location, which you should think of as the input, into the function. So the 5/3 gets cubed here and here, and you get so 5 cubed over 3 cubed twice minus 5 times 5/3 times 5/3. Probably simplify. You can always have the calculator do it too. So 2 times 5 cubed minus 3 times 5 cubed, I think, right? Because you need to put another factor of 3 here to get a common denominator. So I believe you get negative 5 cubed over 3 cubed, which is about negative 4 point something. It's So that seems to be the minimum. About negative 4.6. Okay. Yeah. Maybe negative 4.6. So the z value at the bottom of that bowl is negative 4.63. The z value at the saddle point is 0, 0. Well, that's easy. You just plug in a bunch of zeros and you get 0. Of course, we're usually not as interested in the those z values because, again, with those z values, it's always easier to go a little higher or a little lower. So they're not very interesting if you're trying to optimize. They're kind of more like, oh, this is a problem, let's avoid it. Okay, questions or comments?
So you never want to get to what point again?
Well, if you're trying to optimize you find some critical points, you have to check what kind of critical points you have, right? If you want a maximum, then you don't want a saddle point and you don't want a local minimum. If you want a minimum, you don't want a saddle point and you don't want a local maximum. I can't think of any scenario where you actually want a saddle point. What you want is a minimum or a maximum. Okay. I guess that there's the cloth for erasing. The eraser itself seems to have disappeared some days ago. Okay. So if you have trouble, you know, actually getting a plot of this thing, it's still possible to classify a critical point without looking at a plot. So I gave the classification last time. I just didn't have time to work through the example. Here's the classification again. I think I call them hills and bowls sometimes. Thank you. One time you might get tripped up and want to go for a plot is if you get exact equality here, where the second x partial times the second y partial equals the square of the mixed partial, the mixed second partials, they say. That would be inconclusive. But usually, you're not in that situation, and you'll be in one of the three cases. So let's see how that works out here. So remember the subscript here, that's just notation for taking a partial derivative. Okay, so partial f partial x, people write f sub x for short, f sub y for short when they want the y partial derivative. Save space. It's the only virtue I see to it. Okay. So if I write f sub x x, that means take the x partial derivative twice. Think of it this way. This will be the second x partial derivative. So I already computed the x partial derivative last time, so don't need to repeat that. Okay, now we need the x partial derivative of this. So we have to take the derivative. If you like the prime notation, you might write it this way. Here it is with differentials. And in both cases, what you get is 6x. Because the key here is you're computing these x derivatives with y constant. That's what the partial derivative means. Hold all the variables except one constant. Find the rate of change with respect to that one variable. See what's happening here, the differential of the x squared is a 2x dx times 3, 6x dx. We're getting a slope here, so we divide by dx, so we just have 6x. Okay. Or if you like derivatives directly, if you know, x squared prime is 2x times 3 is 6x. And there's that minus 5y there, but we're holding y constant, so that's just a constant. So it just becomes a plus zero when you take the derivative. Of course, that contributes nothing.
Questions, comments there? All right, let's do another one.
Pretty straightforward. I mean, I picked this to be straightforward. It's just a little polynomial. I didn't want to spend all day on a complicated derivative for this one. Okay. So now we're going to take the y partial derivative. Okay. So this is where kind of your prime notation may fall down a little bit, right? Because when I write the prime, what variable am I taking the derivative with respect to? Right? So a little ambiguous. Taking the y derivative, or derivative with respect to y, and we're holding the x constant. So now the 3x squared is all just a constant. The differential of 5y, well, that's a constant multiple rule, factor out the 5, is 5dy, which you divide by dy. So you just get 5. There's a factor of minus 1 there, too, so negative 5. So you get negative 5. The third partial derivative we need is what's called the second y partial derivative. So we take the y partial of the y partial. Okay, so we have now 3y squared. Minus 5x. We'll take the y partial. in with x held constant. We have 3y squared plus negative 5x. And so constant multiple rule, factor out the 3. You have a y squared. Its differential is 2y dy. And then you have plus a negative 5x, which is all being held constant, so plus 0. So 3 times 2y times a dy that gets canceled plus a 0. Which, when divided by 2y, of course, is still 0. So we get 6y. So that allows us to make then a table. So we have two critical points. We have the second x partial. We have the second y partial. It's the 6y. So 6x, 6y, and then the mixed second partial, which just came out negative 5.
There's only 3, or you just decided to just 3?
Only 3.
3 partials.
Well, there's 4 second partial derivatives, right? Because you could take the x partial of the y partial. However, you actually don't need to know that because... they actually work out the same. That's not obvious, perhaps, but you could think of it as a rate. You could think of it as, in one version, you say, okay, I want to look at changes in y, so I have kind of a y slope. And I'm asking, then, how does the y-slope change as I vary x? And then here I have, I have changes in x, so how does the x-slope vary then as I change y? So it's not obvious, but they are actually equal. And so you can check it easily enough, right? We already got the first one, it was negative 5. So this one would be 3y squared minus 5x. Subscript x, right? So here's the y partial derivative, now take the x partial derivative of that, and this term will be a constant. We're going to hold y constant. And then here, we will have minus 5 dx all over dx, right? Take the x differential, divide by dx. And we get negative 5, which is the same as the other mixed second partial. So there's 4 second partials when you have 2 input variables. But only 3 of them are actually distinct. If you have 3 input variables, then you have 9 second partial derivatives, but only 6 of them are distinct. Because it doesn't matter the order in which you take the partial derivatives. So you only need to check these three. That's why this classification here only depends on three of them, because in a sense there are only three. The fourth one's just a copy. And there are third level partial derivatives, you know, f, f, x, 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 and so on, but those don't come up very often in applications. Just like the third derivative, you probably have never seen that come up in an application.
Does that get at your question, kind of? Other questions?
Okay. Well, we'll try the classification here. So, okay, when x is 0 and y is 0, so 6x will be 0, 6y will be 0, and then negative 5. You know, for our classification, we want to square it. So let's just square it, right? We get 25. Right? And then here we have 6 times 5 thirds, so that will be 10. And then here we're going to have, again, 6 times 5 thirds, so also 10. And here we get 25 again, right? This, the mixed second partial, it's called mixed because it uses two different input variables for measuring the slope of slope. The mixed second partial there is a constant in this particular example. So it's always 25 when you square it. Okay, so then the question is, what happens when we multiply them? Right? So usually we're worried about saddle points, right? We want to avoid those. So we want to target the good case, right? Okay, so look at this. We got, in the first case, is 0 greater than 25? No. Right, 0 times 0 is 0. It's not greater than 25. So that's a saddle point. And here, though, 10 times 10 is 100, which is greater than 125. And, moreover, looking at this classification here, look at the pure second partial derivatives, where you use the same input variable for the slope of slope. And you just have to look at the sign. And in this case, it's positive. So, we have a local minimum. Okay. So you can actually do the classification without having a plot at all.
Cheers.
Okay, so here's a problem from geometry. Okay. Let's consider a triangular cylinder. With base B, height H, and I guess I'll call it length L. Okay. So what do I mean by that? Okay. B, H, and then the triangular cylinder extends this way. L. Okay. So maybe you're designing tents, or maybe you're shipping some things in some triangular containers. Right. You could, and of course, this is just one example. You could change the geometry if you want. Right. So let's say we have a volume of, so let's say we want the whole thing to have a volume of 10 cubic feet. Right? I want to find B, H, and L that minimize the surface area. Right? If I'm making a triangular shaped box like this, I want to get my 10 cubic meters inside the least amount of cardboard or whatever, right? I'd want to minimize the surface area. Geometry, this one. I'll make the geometry slightly easier. I'll say it's an isosceles triangle, meaning that this side and this side, which I'll call S, are the same. Okay. So we want to minimize area, which will be the area of the five faces. Okay. So on the bottom here, the bottom face will be B times L. And then there's this slanted side, which is S times L. Then there's another slanted side on the back. So two of those. And then there's the front face here, so to speak, and then there's that face in the back. So that would be using the 1/2 BH formula. Now, we know something, though. We know that we want the volume to be 10 cubic feet. And the volume would be the area of, say, this triangular face, 1/2 base height, times the length. So and we need ever so slightly more information. We need to know the length of one of these slant sides, and that you can get from the Pythagorean theorem. So on problems like these, I For a business math class, I'm very helpful, and I give the relevant geometry formulas.
Do you remember, say, the area of a triangle? If we don't remember the area of a triangle?
My focus here is more on, can you do the calculus part and the algebra that supports the calculus? Mm-hmm. Not so much, can you do the geometry? Depending on what kind of business you go into, geometry and even trigonometry may be important for your work. But the business degrees don't require that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, what we can do with this is, it looks like there's really three inputs, but because we have this constraint, right, that we only need 10 cubic feet of volume, we can eliminate one of the variables. So I'm going to eliminate L, okay? Solve that constraint equation there for L, and you get, multiply both sides by 2, you get BHL equals 20, divide both sides by BH, L is 20 over BH. Okay. So now, is that? We reduce the problem to minimizing that new formula. So take 20 over BH and plug it into your formula for A. Everywhere you see an L, plug it in. So like BL will become B times 20 over BH, which will be 20 over H. 2 times S, so S will be the thing with the square root. The L will be the 20 over BH, so you'll get 40 over BH when you multiply by 2 times your square root expression. And then here there's no L, so that 1 half BH term is the same.
I think
there's two faces, right? There's the 1 half BH here in the front, and then there's another one in the back, so. So you add them together, you just get BH. Okay. So now what we need to do is find the critical points. So we need to solve a system of two equations. We need the H partial derivative and the B partial derivative to be zero.
Of that blend.
Questions about the setup of the problem?
Minimize. I want to find the local min.
Hopefully, yes, and hopefully it'll be the global min.
You have a question? Yeah, the 20H.
Uh-huh.
Why did it go to 20 inches? What happened to the B?
It got, this B gets canceled with that B. Now we do the actual calculus part. We have to take some derivatives here. Okay, so I'm going to take derivatives with respect to b first. So I'm going to hold h constant. So this term will have zero b partial derivative. Here things are going to get a little more complicated. So just for record keeping here, this was the b partial of 20 over h. Let me get the easy one out of the way. If you take the bh and compute its b partial derivative, so the h will just be a constant multiple because we're holding h constant. And then the derivative of b, that'll just be db over db, which will just be 1. Right? But then we have to multiply it by the constant multiple h. And then we get to the tricky one. Alright. Okay. So when it looks tricky, see if you can simplify it at all before you actually take the derivatives.
I'm sorry, is that a 1?
That's a 1. Support the work. Okay, so you can bring the b and h inside the square root. I mean, in the domain we're interested in, the b and the h are positive. So the square root of b squared is b. The square root of h squared is h. So you can bring them inside. 40 hasn't gone away. We have h squared plus b squared over 4. And then we have the denominator b squared h squared. And you can break this up into two fractions. In the one fraction, you'll have h squared over b squared h squared. And so there'll be a cancellation, and you get 1 over b squared. In the second fraction, when we break it up, we'll have b squared over 4, and then we divide all that by b squared h squared. So b squared will cancel the second fraction, and we'll have division by 4 and h squared. We can make it a little simpler. But we're still a little annoyed by it. It's still kind of complicated. But I'm going to notice that not only do we need the b partial derivative of this, we're also going to need its h partial derivative. So Let's see here. So what I'll do is I'll take the differential of the whole of that whole square root expression, and I'll get both partial derivatives. Okay. So let me get the rest of the h partial derivative while I'm at it.
Okay.
So the 20 over h will be negative 20 over h squared once you take its h partial derivative. The bh will be a 1 times a b once you take its h partial derivative. Maybe I should write it as b times 1. And then we'll have something else here. For that one, we're still trying to figure out. Make this top one a little less crowded. So we need to know both partial derivatives. So if you remember, I was talking about the total differential, how it groups into the partial derivative terms. We can just find the differential of that thing using the rules we learned way back earlier in the semester. Just get the differential of this and then group it into the dB terms and the dH terms. That's exactly what we want. So if you need to know all the partial derivatives of some formula, you might as well just get the differential and then group the terms, because it'll probably be about equally hard to get the partial derivatives separately or to get the differential as a whole. Sometimes one way is slightly easier than another. And if you have more practice with the differentials, differentialing may be faster because you only have to do differentials once and then just group them. Okay. So, that's what I'm going to use here. So I need to, first I can pull out the 40. Then I have a square root. Okay, so remember that this differential rule for square roots. Right there. And then I have a numerator where I have to get the differential of. Power rule on this one. And oops, I forgot the dB. Okay. Plug that into your numerator there. And then you just have to group everything into dB terms and dH terms. Okay. the dB terms. We'll have negative 2 times b to the minus 3 times a dB in that numerator. It'll get multiplied by 40, it'll get divided by 2, and by that square root. Partial derivative will be negative 20 over h squared plus b from up there. And then here we just need to grab our dh terms. So we'll have a fourth of negative 2 of h to the negative 3 in that numerator. We're going to divide by 2. We're going to divide by the square root expression. We're going to multiply by the 40. So some stuff will get canceled. Negative 2 times 40 is 80. 4 times 2 is 8 in the denominator. So we'll have, I believe, negative 10. Okay. So I did all that by hand. You don't have to do it all by hand, depending on your calculator. I can ask my calculator to find one of these derivatives. When I put in multiple variables and I ask it to do a derivative with respect to one variable, my calculator does a partial derivative by default. If I give it multiple input variables and I take the derivative with respect to this variable, it assumes the other variables should be held constant. It takes a partial derivative. So my calculator is... I do second, and then there's a little d above my 8 key, for example. Right? Your calculator may be different, but in any case, if you have a calculator that can do symbolic differentiation, you don't have to do all this by hand. At the very least, you could check your answers. Okay. So these are the formulas we got. And... so now the problem is we need to figure out when are they both zero, which doesn't look exactly trivial, right? So what you want to do here is, again, you want to have your calculator solve it if possible. You may be able to get some of it done by hand. But once it gets to some level of complexity, I would go through and I would solve it with at least some help from my calculator, but I said I would use the last 10 minutes of this class day for teaching a vowel, so I'm going to have to... maybe I can come back to this next time. Send you all a note about the next part. It's some mix of ugly algebra and calculator magic for the next part. I'll give you an easier problem for your homework, okay?
You're going to need a very intense calculator to do calculations right.
If I give you a simpler shape, you could do it all on paper, okay?
Okay.
So what is this? This is day 25? Yeah. Let's use a simpler geometry, but Same goal. Minimize the surface area. Okay. If you know some geometry, you may be able to guess what the dimensions that work are. You might have the intuition that it should be a cube, right? And you would be right. So, if you're clever with the geometry, you may be able to do this one without. And my box looks a little off. I'm quite happy with that. More like this. Match my perspective that I drew. Yeah, something like that. Anyways. Here's another one. Classify the critical points of this function. If you do find any local minima and maxima, find their z values, because when people say local minimum or local maximum, they usually mean the value of the function, the output. Okay. So that will be the homework, and the thing I wanted to do now. Last time I checked earlier today, 12 of you had evaluated this course online with the online form. So what I'll do now is, if you brought a laptop or a tablet or a phone and you would like to evaluate the course now, you can do that right now. Right? You take out your phone, your laptop, and you can evaluate it. If you've already done that or you don't want to do it now, I guess you can leave early. Or if you want to go to a computer lab and do it there. You can find the link in Blackboard. You can find the link in the course webpage I maintain too. You can go directly to the link. However you want to get there. Okay. And as it was in the past, it will still be anonymous. I still won't get to see, you know, anything until after final grades. And, you know, even now, you know, all I know is, you know, how many people have done the evaluation, but not whom. Okay.